Hello there. I just wanted to let you know that today's conversation is between two adults, and because there are two adults in the conversation, sometimes colorful language is used. If there are small children in the room, you might want to put your headphones on. Okay, enjoy today's conversation. This is the Photographer's Revolution podcast, and I am your host, Dana Pugh. So I'm super excited to have Catherine North here on the podcast today. Catherine North is from DeclareDominion.com, and she helps entrepreneurs, you help female business owners become even epic badasses more than they are, right? Am I right?
Corporate type, some business owners, and then a fair amount of women in the C-suite.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's fancy. Okay. So why don't you, Catherine? Catherine's my friend. I first met Catherine because she moved to Canada to marry my friend Nick. And now we've become friends. And so I would love for Catherine to just spend a few minutes telling us about her journey, because it's crazy and epic in its own version. It's crazy. So I would love to hear how you became DeclareDominion.com.
All right. Well, you know, there's so many stories I could tell. There was a story when I was living in Tokyo and there was a huge earthquake and I left with my little girl and a suitcase and I moved to Portland, Oregon. We won't go back that far. We'll go back to the part where I was in Portland, Oregon. I was a really happy solo mom of one little girl, and I had this life coaching business, which I adored. I got to work with really smart, interesting, passionate, tender, mystical women all around the world from my little, you know, perch in Portland. And then something completely unexpected happened to me. I was almost 40. I was happily single. I wasn't dating at all. I had no interest in dating. And I fell madly in love with this Canadian. So fast forward several years later, I am living in the same town as Dana in Alberta, Canada. So I went from being a solo mom of one kid living in the city to being a suburban mom of five, complete with minivan. And Wow, what a shift that was. Luckily, because my business is virtual and I do all my coaching over the phone, I was able to just carry my business with me, which was a huge gift. So I'm still doing the same thing. I work with incredible women around the world. Some of them run their own businesses. Some are creatives, but many of them are working in the corporate world. And they've all gotten to a certain point in their career where they're very successful. And people look at them and they think, oh my gosh, she has it all together. She's got it made. Which in some cases is true, but they are always on. Like, these women never get to turn it off, you know? They walk around and people sometimes recognize them. Not that they're famous, but, you know, if you live in a small town, you know, and, you know, you're the head of whatever at the company, people know you. They know your face. And for the people who have online businesses, they've found that every online interaction started to feel very strategic. And they had a really hard time having kind of authentic interactions because it was all about, like, well, does this hurt my brand? Am I going to lose credibility if I share this story? And then for other people, you know, maybe they run a family business. And so literally everyone they come in contact with, whether it's they're at home with their family, you know, their extended family, or they're out getting groceries, is either an employee or a colleague or a potential client. And so these women start to feel like everybody needs something from them. And it's really hard for them to find a place where they can just talk 100% unfiltered. So I am that place. I am their refuge. I am the place where they just let it all fly.
I think that's so awesome, because actually as entrepreneurs, even like I feel like I've had the conversation with so many women lately who are entrepreneurs, that on a smaller level, that's their experience. Like, they're afraid to share certain stories on social media because how will it affect their brand? And mm-hmm. and most female entrepreneurs, particularly photographers, they lead their branding with themselves. So
right.
themselves and their stories. So getting tangled up. So when you want to share something that's not on brand, you don't know how to do that. So so it's this like weird balancing act of trying to remain authentic,
yes.
but at the same time trying to remain on brand, and how difficult mm-hmm. and complicated that can be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's amazing that you do that. So what's your advice? Do you have any like tips or advice on how to balance that?
You know, my tagline is life is complicated, but let's make it gorgeous anyway. So I lucked out because in my own branding, I kind of included this fact that life is complicated and messy, which gives me room to talk about the fact that my own life is messy and complicated. And one of my flagship programs is called the EFBA program. And I'm going to swear here
this
morning
cool.
for anyone who's at work. EFBA stands for Epic Fucking Badass. And the year that I declared myself an epic fucking badass and I said I was going to teach other women how to do that was one of the hardest years of my life. It was so rough. And so I've been able for years now to share my life really openly on the internet. But it is always a balance. And now that I'm married and I have a partner, you know, and we have kids and our kids are getting older and it's different, you know, when you have a toddler than if you have a teen or a preteen.
Right.
So we're always walking that fine line. One of the phrases that has stood me in good stead is always to speak from the scar and not the wound. You know, so I may share glimpses of stuff that's going on in the moment, but I don't really get into it in my weekly missives, my blogs, or in my course materials until I've come kind of at least partway out the other side. And I feel like I have something useful to share instead of just spraying my experience onto my people.
I think that is awesome advice. Because I remember too, like when social media was relatively new and my kids were small and I shared on social media an episode of that happened to Jack. It was a deeply personal episode and I was in the wound. Like the wound was fresh and I shared it without thinking, because my social media at the time and many people's social media at the time was just like you know, kind of like vomiting. Like you're just like letting it go, putting it all out there. And then that was my first experience where I realized, oh, wait a minute, I can't do this. I can't just share everything anymore, because there's people out there who, for whatever reason, you know, it's going to affect them in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I had to like pull it back. And now I feel like there's this me trying to figure out, when do I share? When am I ready to share? What do I share? And there's the kids involved and getting their permission. And yeah, so that's interesting. I love the idea of like sharing from the scar.
And we're actually in the middle of making a documentary right now. Dana, right. You know this. We got a grant to make a documentary about our family. Because in some ways, we look very kind of ordinary. We have the mom and the dad and the minivan and the five kids and a dog. But one of the things that makes our family really unusual is that my husband, Nick, is transgender. So Nick was living as a woman when we started dating and transitioned shortly after we married. Transitioned publicly, I should say.
Right.
So we're making this documentary about something that is so personal and so intimate. And it involves our kids, but in many ways, it's more about our marriage. So we are right in the thick of wrestling with, you know, how do we tell a story that is true? If it's not true, there's really no point, while also respecting, you know, our kids' privacy and their autonomy, and, you know, trying to keep all of that in integrity has been tricky. So it'll come out this summer. We'll see. We'll see if we get it right or not.
But I think you guys have been like, both of you, your brands are so your people. Like it's so your own personality that the people that you attract probably love what you're doing. I am sure a lot of hate comes too, particularly around this particular subject, but that for the most part, you end up being surrounded by people who love and support and value your journey.
Yeah, it's interesting. The more vocal we are online about who we truly are, the more people filter themselves out. Yeah. You know, and I have worked for myself. I have been an entrepreneur for, I can hardly believe it, but like over 12 years now. And And I haven't had a quote unquote real job with a paycheck since I was like 22. Right. So I've been at this a long time, and it's given me a lot of freedom. And so the fact that I am super vocal about my politics, I am a left-leaning, bleeding-heart liberal, I am feminist as fuck, I am queer, I am pro-choice, like that is all over everything. I swear all the time. And I'm not shy about it, partly because I don't ever want to do a bait and switch. You know, right. I don't want someone to be like, oh, she's like this nice life coach. And then I'm like a fucking fire dragon. And, you know, they're scared. Yeah. Like the fact that like we're both very open about it. And Nick is very open about being trans. And so in many ways, like by the time people get to us, they've sort of self-filtered.
Right. And I think that's what happens when you lead with your story. That's just a natural progression of leading with your own story from a place of truth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk a bit about the work that you do. Let's talk more specifically about the work that you do with business owners, with people in the C-suite. I've never heard it called that.
Yeah, you know, COOs, CFOs, CIOs, there's a lot of people besides the CEO who make big corporations happen. And these right. women are in positions of immense power to change things for both themselves and all the women who come after them, and also intense pressure.
Right.
You know, the pressure that these women are under is unreal. And so many of them find it's really, really helpful to have a person who doesn't need anything from them, who doesn't have anything invested in the choices they make, right? I don't give a shit what they do. I mean, I care a lot, but it doesn't matter to me. And so having a really neutral, safe space where they can kind of let it all fall apart and then put it all back together and get really clear is invaluable to them. Right. And then I do have a few people I work with who are, you know, they're creatives, they're, you know, have been at their creative work for a long time. They're very well known in their field. And then I do have some people who straight up run businesses like you and I do, Dana.
Right.
And like in the photography industry, in the life coaching industry, there are very, very many, many people who make most of their living only teaching other people to do rather than doing themselves.
Right.
And we need those people, right? We need people to train life coaches. We need photographers who will teach other photographers. However, I think I can say this here. There is this shadow side to all of this, right? There is so much snake oil out there.
So much snake oil.
More snake oil. Oh my God. It makes me crazy.
Yeah.
And truthfully, like if you guys think it's hard to make a living as photographers, you should try selling life coaching. At right. least as photographers, you have a finished product you can point to. You can point to a beautiful image. Right. Literally, we are selling air.
Right. It's like, I promise you one day it'll all work out.
Yeah, yeah. Right? And yeah. And especially for me, I don't talk about my clients' results, which is like my main value to my clients is that I'm a steel trap. And so, you know, and yet, so I guess what I'm trying to say is I have been in business for a long time. I'm a seasoned entrepreneur. I love marketing and business. I used to be a consultant before I went out on my own. And so I geek out on this stuff. I think it's super interesting. And even so, it is not an easy industry to make a living in, especially if you are trying to support a family.
Right.
So I went from being the breadwinner for myself and my daughter to, you know, being a co-breadwinner with my husband, Nick. But I'm the main breadwinner in our family, and we're both very open about sharing that. And so I saw that there are so many life coach training programs who churn out hundreds, truly thousands of new life coaches every month.
Yeah.
And they sell them all on this promise, like, become a life coach. It's great. You're going to make all this great money. And it's such BS, and it makes me crazy. So anyway, I got on a bit of like a passion frenzy. And I started writing about money and I started thinking about it and talking about it. And I just really wanted to create something for people that would actually be useful. And there's so much focus in the industry on getting to like a certain number, you know, make your first right. six figures, get to a quarter million, you know, get to the million mark, wherever you are, you know, however long you've been in business, there's like a certain benchmark and everybody's talking about getting there. However, these people are only talking about revenue.
Right.
Right? Dana, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
All they're talking about is revenue. And no one talks about, in order to get to your first six figures, how much will you have to spend?
Yeah.
No one talks about your P&L, your profit and loss statement. And I think it's so much more important to talk about profit and to understand your profit as someone going into business. So I went on a bit of a tear. I recorded all these videos. And then I've created these systems for myself. They're like spreadsheets with all these formulas in them that I've had people make. And I bundled it all together and I made this course called Money in the Bank. And it's completely separate from everything else I do. And I just made it because I needed to.
Right. I think it's so, you're right. There's so much snake oil out there. And I think for women, what happens is there's this appeal to the idea of being able to work at home while raising your kids. And we sort of think that there's going to be this side hustle, whatever it is, that kids are going to be the primary focus and that I'm going to be able to work at home and have this side hustle. And we never really think through what that actually is going to look like. And very shortly, we realize that running a business cannot be a side hustle. Like, it's always more work than you think. And so, and it's funny because I know, like, politically we align quite a bit, but politically I've started to think about that and how, like, daycare is such a huge political issue, and it should be really for the economy, the economic well-being of our nation. Making daycare more affordable for families would be such a huge benefit, because then women wouldn't feel this pressure to stay home and be with their children, because daycare is going to cost way too much and the cost of that doesn't make sense for them to go back to work.
And sure. There are so many countries in Europe that have absolutely figured this out.
Yeah.
Right. That really support families in which both parents work, and maybe both of them, you know, work 3/4 time, or one of them works half time, and one, there's so much flexibility that most of the people in Northern America don't get to experience.
Right. And I think that's why people are drawn to careers like photography, like life coaching and interior design and cake baking and all those sorts of things. Any sort of
fantasy that you could do it at home while the kids are sleeping.
Yeah.
And then it works.
It's so like, I know, like, I remember when my kids were little and like working during nap time, when they would go to preschool for like 2 hours, it was like rush, get all the work done, so much work. And then my husband would come home, we would eat dinner as a family. I would literally say, put the kids to bed. And I would come and start work at like 6:30, 7 o'clock at night and work until midnight with no...
That's exhausting.
It's exhausting. And so many women do it. And no thought to how this was affecting my relationship with my children or my relationship with my husband until, you know, you hit the wall and you realize this is a no good way to run a family. You know?
And it's funny, I had the opposite experience. I've always been a full-time working mother since the time my daughter was little. So she's always gone to daycare.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful for us. It was great for her. She had a great time. She lived in this world that was made for people her age, right? The food was beautifully concocted with her and, you know, three-year-olds in mind. And the activities were completely like gorgeous craft things that I would have never done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She loved it. It was great for her. It was great for me. I had dedicated work time when she was at daycare and I was working. Oh my God, I hustled like a mofo.
Yeah.
Nobody can work harder than the mother who has like a few hours of uninterrupted work time, right? Like
you
get so much done in a little piece of time. And then I'd pick her up and I got to be 100% mom.
Yeah,
it wasn't all day. So anyway, this is not, I know that for many people, staying home is absolutely the right choice. And I absolutely respect that and support that. But I do think that there's a lot of stigma around putting your kids in any kind of childcare, and I would love to erase that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that what happens is you think there's going to be no mommy guilt if you're at home working and your kids are there. But that's not true, because then you have
It's like 24/7 mommy guilt.
Yeah, 24/7 mommy guilt. Every time you sit down to work, even if they're like busy playing with each other and you don't need to oversee it, if you sit down to work, you feel bad because you're like, well, I could be you know, making muffins
I'm
with them.
I'm not being present.
I'm not being present. You know, they're especially like if you're in the middle of something and they come up and they're like, mommy, I need you. You know, there's nothing like trying to edit a wedding, especially a wedding, because it takes so long to edit a wedding. You really have to be in it. And then having these kids coming and like, you know, tugging on your sleeve, like, hey, mom, make me a snack. Hey, mom, I need my diaper changed or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so there's always going to be guilt. And even like having the guilt of making my husband, which is not, this is not the right wording, but having my husband put the kids to bed every night and not being able to be present for that, there's a certain amount of guilt that comes with that because you're busy working for other people. So I think that women need to realize that, you know what, there's going to be guilt.
So no matter what, no matter what you do, no matter you're going to feel guilty.
Yeah.
You can't feel guilty. So you just have to choose your guilt.
Yeah.
Which flavor would you like to have today?
Yeah. And what's going to be the easiest and best for your family and the situation? And it's going to evolve and change, but to always like take stock and go, wait a minute. Am I giving my husband the attention he needs or my partner the attention that they need? Am I giving my kids? And am I giving myself the attention I need? Like, where's the space for grace? As I always say space for grace, but the room for me in my life. Because your life can't be all your children, your spouse, and your job. There has to be time for you too. Mm-hmm. Or what's the point of it all?
Yeah. There is this great research that's been done. There's this wonderful book called Overwhelmed. You don't need to go out and read it. Unfortunately, it's slightly overwhelming, but it's wonderful. It's done by this incredible journalist. And there's people out there researching time. I think they're called time researchers, which is so kind of funny. But they did all this research into the state of flow. I think most people are familiar with that state of flow where you give yourself over to the work and it's like you literally enter a different brain state. Your brain waves are different when they're measuring them. And it's where like the deepest epiphanies and the deepest creativity comes. And it's one of the most satisfying things that humans experience. Well, they did all this research on working women and they discovered that most of them never ever get to flow because of exactly what you talked about. It's so hard for us to give ourselves these containers of time where we can truly give ourselves over to the work, where we can let ourselves get into that deep focus and that deep concentration, right? Because you're, even if you've got a room of your own, as Virginia Woolf said, and you can close the door, you've got one ear cocked. Right? Totally. Is everybody alive? Is anyone screaming? You know, is my husband okay? Is he going to lose his shit on them? You know, whatever.
Yeah.
right? Can the babysitter handle this?
Yeah.
And I mean, if you think about what are we robbing the world of? If there's this, you know, wave of women who never get to do their deepest, best work because literally they can't let themselves, can't let their brains go to that state. Oh my gosh, what a loss.
Yeah, what a huge loss. It's funny because I have trouble some days shutting off the mental workload of being the mom because there's mm-hmm. so much mental work, as I know everybody's talked a lot about, but you know, even today it's like, okay, Jack has finals coming up. Has he asked his teacher this? You know, Georgia needs me to text her that. I need to get lunch ready for this person. So even when you're sitting down to work, your brain takes that, it takes a while to like turn that switch off of the mental mm-hmm. list that's always running in your head. That's interesting. I have heard about the state of flow, but I never have heard that research. That's fascinating. Do you have suggestions for people as to how to get there? Like if you are having mm-hmm. trouble finding space for the state of flow, what do you mm-hmm. think we should be doing to get there?
I think creating really clear, like almost ruthless boundaries.
Yes.
Between now I am working and now I am parenting. And so for some people that might look like, you know, daycare. It might look like hiring a sitter for your kids and getting the hell out of Dodge so that you are nowhere near the action.
Yes, like right? You do. You have anybody who follows you on social media, which you should go follow Catherine on social media for sure.
Hey.
She takes these
declare
little
dominion.
I don't know. Declare dominion. Mm-hmm. Instagram, declare dominion. you'd go out and like get a hotel room.
I do.
Yeah.
I take solo retreats. I try to take one quarterly and I go away for a few nights by myself. And my beloved husband is not invited. No one is invited. The whole point is that it's just me. And it's honestly, it's when I do my best work. Yeah. And it's when I fill up, because I'm a total introvert living in a house with six other people.
Yeah. So this is smart. That's smart.
But it doesn't have to be that extreme, right? It's hard for many women to be like, I can't possibly leave for 3 days. I can't even get away for 3 hours.
Right.
So start with small blocks of time. Even if it's like, I don't know, you make a deal with your partner. You're like, I will give you an hour when you can go do whatever the heck you want. And I promise no one will bother you. But then I want an hour. And like, unless literally the house is burning down, you cannot bother me. And you put on noise canceling headphones and you shut the door, you know, and you listen to music. Like, you have to create spaces where you're not on, right? Right. That's, oh, and what they call it is contaminated time. When you're like trying to edit a wedding with one part of your brain, but another part of you is thinking about Jack Spinos, and then another part of you is listening for like, oh God, are the dogs losing their minds? It's called contaminated time.
Right.
When you're doing one thing, but you're thinking that you should be doing 17 other things.
Yeah.
And it's epidemic.
It is. I have so much contaminated time. Oh my gosh.
So much of my work with my clients is helping all of us get out of contaminated time. And I'm a super ADD right brain, dreamy, like squirrel brain. Like if I see a can of beans on the counter, I am thinking about beans and literature. The Andy Warhol can of, oh no, that wasn't beans, that was tomato soup. And then I'm thinking about tomato soup and tomatoes, the Great Gatsby. Like, I'm all over the place. So I have a slew of systems that I use to help me manage my own brain, plus my 5 children,
yes,
plus my husband.
Right. So solo retreats, and what else?
And, let's keep going. And like containers of time, even if it's just an hour and you have to barter with your partner.
Yeah.
You know, or a babysitter who comes, you know, for 3 hours a week, even if it's just once, or sorry, 3 hours at a time, even if it's just once a week.
Yeah.
If you knew that you could depend on those 3 hours where you could truly give yourself over to the work, you might be amazed at what you can do, as opposed to when we're trying to like kind of half work all the time, but also kind of keep an eye on the kids.
Yeah.
Right. And you feel like you're always working and you're so tired. And yet you also are like, oh my God, I don't know that I got anything really done.
Right. And I think, you know what, I've seen sort of a movement amongst people who have young children, maybe not 5 children, but like 1 or 2 children each. I've seen this movement to like share childcare. So like, if you take my kids for a day, I'll take your kids for a day. And my guess is that if you just gave up your kids to your friend for that, from like 9 o'clock till 4 o'clock every day, or not every day, one day a week, and then took their kids the next day, during that one day, you'd get way more done than during the time slots where you're like struggling with your kids at home.
Absolutely.
So if you can't afford daycare, what I'm saying is, surely you have a parent, a sibling, a friend who can help you with that.
Another harried photographer, who also feels like she's drowning. Yeah. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea. And I think we need more honesty from women who kind of been at it for a while, like kind of the success stories. I want to hear more about like, but what's happening behind the scenes? How much help do you have? And I'll start.
Yeah.
We have so much help behind the scenes. So I run my business. My husband also runs a business. We have a blended family, which means that some of our kids go to another house some of the time, which yes, it's true, does give us more space, but also means like a tangle of logistical complications that you can only imagine if you've been through this, as I'm sure many of you have. So all of our kids are either in school or they're in basically full-time daycare. And I have zero guilt about that. I feel so great about that.
Yeah.
Also, we have, I have people who work, you know, with me in my business, but also at home, we have someone who comes 2 days a week and she is our home assistant. So she does laundry. She goes to the grocery store. She mails packages. She goes to the dry cleaners. She updates addresses in the databases. She does like all of the things that we all have to do. She does them for us so that my husband and I can both work. Right. And I will tell you what, there is something about paying someone to do that for you that shows you just how much work there is. She does 2 full days a week. That means that both Nick and I would have to give up 1 full working day a week.
Right.
In order to get that same amount of stuff done, right? It's kind of shocking when you think about that. It is a lot of work to keep a family going.
It is. And it's so funny because it's interesting to look at it that way, because I think most of us sit around with, again, all this guilt and this constant mm-hmm. list in our head of all the things and how easy it would be to relieve that. Because you know what? Like, you can hire people to do that for not yes. as much money as you think.
In fact, I will guarantee that there is another stay-at-home mom who really wants to be at home with her kids but is really tight on money, who would love nothing more than to do your laundry for you,
yeah.
right? Or a mom with school-age kids who has this strange pocket of time between like 9 and 2 every day where yeah. she could work, but it's really hard to get a job at any place out in the world doing that, who would love nothing more than to come to your house and run around and run all your errands.
Yeah. Or right? even like, I have had an assistant in the past. I don't right now, but I have asked this one girl to be my assistant in the past. And she just emailed me because her kids are going to school now full time. And she's like, I have this pocket of time.
Yes.
And she's like, can I answer emails? Can I, like, what can I do from home? And I'm like, oh, I could send you tons of stuff to do from home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like yeah. I got tons, you know, and if you uh-huh. let, it's just a matter of like letting that go. And I know we have a housekeeper, and not everybody feels this way about their house, but both my husband and I don't do well when there's a lot of clutter or like things, when there's a huge mess, I'm always thinking about the mess that needs to be picked up. And having like, and especially I just watched that Marie Kondo tidying mm-hmm. up thing. And I do love it, 'cause our closets could use some of that Marie Kondoing, but, I felt pretty good about the state of our house and the fact that it stays pretty tidy, because we force ourselves by having a cleaner come every 2 weeks. She comes, and it's honestly, we have like a fairly big house, like, you know, 2,700 square feet with a fully developed basement. So just over 3,000 square feet. And she cleans it and it takes her 3 hours, and it is $100 every time she comes. And it's like, you know what, for $200 a month, those 6 hours that I don't have to clean toilets or wash the floor, I'm super grateful for. It's mm-hmm. the same idea. It's the same idea. And then it forces
you. And it's not just yeah. those 6 hours. It's yeah. all of the mental energy that you would spend every other hour of every other day being like, oh, yeah. I have to go. That bathroom's getting out of hand. Oh, I really should vacuum. Oh, yeah. Look at the baseboards. They're gross. And again, it comes back to that idea of contaminated time.
Yeah.
And most of us are so used to living in contaminated time that we don't even notice it. And, you know, I'm a huge Marie Kondo fan.
Yeah.
And I love, like, because I'm so ADD and distractible, for me, visual clutter is a huge detriment to my mental state.
Yeah.
And so I actually run a program called The Queen Sweep, which is all about clearing clutter, but also setting up systems right. so that all of this kind of day-to-day stuff just runs itself on autopilot and you don't have to think about it so much.
Yeah.
Because, oh my gosh, the mental energy is invaluable. What if you could take all of that energy and put it back into your business and put it right. back into your creativity, or put it into your kids or your marriage or yourself?
Or your life. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Like yeah. making time for singing lessons, which is something I did like the last yes. 2 years. You know?
I love that you did that. And it's made you so happy.
Yeah.
That, like, when you talk about your singing lessons, you light up. There is this like vivaciousness that's yeah. so beautiful.
And so many moms in particular, I think, let that go. They let all that little sparks, those sparks of joy, as since we're Marie Kondoing.
Sparkle magic.
Sparkle magic. Oh, yeah. So they let that go for themselves. They're like, there's no time for me. They make sure there's space for those things for their husband and for their children, but not for themselves. Yeah. And so, what else can we talk about?
All of it.
What's next? What's
everything.
Next? I know. All the things.
But it's interesting. We've talked about like housework and childcare and about money. And I honestly think that there's like a really powerful intersection.
Right.
You know, and I think it's kind of like this blind spot that most people don't talk about. And so I love that we're talking about it, you right. know, and that it's not just about revenue. It's about, all right, if you're going to bring in a certain amount of money, what are you going to do with that money? Where are right. you going to invest it? Maybe it all goes into childcare, and that's the very best possible investment you could make instead of new lenses or another photography class.
Right.
You know, maybe you invested in a house cleaner. But yeah, I feel so passionately that I really want to empower women to declare dominion,
yes.
if you will, over this aspect of our lives, because financially empowered women are powerful agents for everything, for their own kids, their own families, but also for their communities, their schools, their churches. And so, like, this is not frivolous. This is not silly. We're not, like, faffing around for fun.
No.
Women who know how to earn and manage their money wisely are amazing benefactors to everyone that they run into. So I feel like it's really sacred work. I want women to take their work seriously, and I want them to give it, like, these juicy parts of themselves and still have enough left over to have those sparks of joy in their personal life as well. And it's not crazy. It's not so out there, but it might mean making some choices that are going to make your judgy sister-in-law or whoever. I don't have a judgy sister-in-law, just for the record, but right. It might make some amazing, right? When people are like, what do you mean you go away by yourself? Or like,
oh yeah.
Someone do your laundry. Someone else does your laundry. Like, oh, I get so much judgment all the time.
You and say I'm that, like, and I just feel so jealous.
I just do not give a shit, because this is how we make it work.
Right.
And it works.
No, and I see women who do that. Like, I'm so jealous that you have that you are just, like, confidently saying, I need this. I'm going to do it. Let's do it. You know?
Yeah.
And so do you have it? So now let's talk about how we get there with our money. Cause I'm wondering, like, why, and through mentoring women on their businesses and in pricing, I've come to realize that women have a lot of shit around money where they don't declare dominion over it. They don't feel like it's theirs to spend. So they're not making their choices based on their needs. They're making their choices based on other people's needs. And they're afraid of the judgy judgersons.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your tips regarding being comfortable with money? Or I don't know, what are your money tips? Do you have money tips?
I mean, money is such a big topic, right? And I think part of the reason that all of us have so much stuff around it is because it has so many tendrils that touch so many parts of our lives, right? And it's very primal.
Yeah.
Money is like, can I feed my kids?
Right. You know? Yeah, without it, right? You're screwed. It's why people get so offended when other people steal, I'm putting steal in like quotation marks, steal work for them from them, or when they feel like this other person in business is undercutting them, you get so offended and so hurt, because it is, they're stealing money from you being able to feed your family, you know? Hmm. Yeah.
I think the first place I would encourage people to start is that even if you're considering your business just this little side hustle for now, I would still encourage you to treat it with respect and to treat it the way you would a true business. And what I mean by that is, whether legally you create an entity or not for your business, I think that you should keep your business finances separate from your personal finances. And this is very easy to do now because of PayPal, right? Yeah. You don't even have to go to a bank and open up a physical account. You can open up a PayPal account. You can get a credit card that is specific to your business, which incidentally makes accounting super easy.
Right.
Because it all just is, it's all right there. Basically, the credit card company has done the accounting for you. And this is all stuff that I can geek out about this stuff forever. I love this stuff. But treat your businesses separately. So treat your business revenue and your business expenses. They're always going to be, you know, in flux. And clarity is your friend. The more clarity you have, the better the decisions you can make.
Yes.
So look at your P&L. Get a profit and loss statement. If you're using any kind of basic accounting system, it will take you literally 30 seconds to pull this. If you're entering things into Excel, it's going to take a little more time. But this is just, you know, plus and minus, right?
Right.
What came in, what went out, what is left. And as soon as you can, you may not be there yet if you're just getting started, start paying yourself as regularly as you can, even if it's like $500 a month, even if it's $50 a month, and take that money out of the business account and put it into your personal account and let it move from that entity over there, which is your business, and feed your personal life. The whole point of having a business is that it's supposed to enrich your life.
Right.
Hopefully it will enrich you financially. If nothing else, it'll enrich you emotionally and creatively. And the more separation you can create, paradoxically, the more healthy both of those things will be. So if you're mixing your money, if you're paying for business stuff out of personal funds, it gets very murky. And if you're married, married, you also then are bringing your partner into things. So the more clarity you can have and the more of a good, clean, healthy separation you can have, the more smoothly it will all go.
Yes. Yes to all of that. To all the things. I agree. And I also think that from an accounting perspective, and I see so many small businesses who have this problem, you lose track of what you spend. So you don't really know because you didn't put down that time that you went with your friend to Starbucks. You didn't put that into your accounting. You didn't put that down as an expense. And so you don't really know, like, what is your business actually costing you?
Right.
Right, because it's not right
there. And you should be claiming everything you can.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
Why not, right? Yeah. And so if you can just get a dedicated credit card that is just for your business, that will make it 1,000% easier to do that. And sometimes people are worried about, like, oh, but I'm just starting out. I'm going to go in the red. It never feels good to be in the red. Yeah. But that's also just a reality of starting a small business. Right. And as long as you're doing it intentionally and mindfully, there are actually certain tax benefits to claiming all of that, even if it does mean that you're in the red. But obviously, of course, you want to move toward being in the black. And again, clarity is key, right? So many women are afraid to look. They're like, if I just don't look, I won't know how bad it is.
Yes, so many. And even I've had women come to me for mentoring. And I'm like, well, what did you spend last year? Like, what were your expenses? And they're like, what? No, I've never tracked them. Oh my gosh, go back and track your expenses.
Yeah.
And then they come back. And I've told this story multiple times, but I've seen a woman come in who's like, I need help. And her revenue was almost 100,000. And I was like, oh, I think you're rocking it. Like, what do you need help with? And she's like, yeah, I need an assistant because I'm so busy, but I don't have any money for one. And I'm like, okay, well, what'd you spend last year? And then she hadn't been tracking. And so then I was like, well, let's go back and take a look at what you spent. And she had spent most of what she had earned, after taxes and after expenses, there was very little left, less than 20,000 left.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, of course, there's no room for her to hire anyone.
And this can happen at every phase, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is why I get so angry at the business coaches who only talk about revenue, who only talk about hitting certain benchmarks. I know someone, great entrepreneur, great guy, great business. He'd been working and working. He had a multiple six-figure business for years and really wanted to hit that $500,000 mark. Finally hit it. Just killed himself to get there. That same year, he went $100,000 into debt.
Yeah, because he wasn't keeping track.
It was his, he wanted to die, right? Like, it was like his worst year.
Yeah.
You know, for him, because he went in the hole. And so it's so important to own this stuff and make really powerful decisions. And debt is not always the enemy, right? Like, to take on mindful debt in order to grow your business can often be a really wise, savvy decision. But like you're saying, Dana, that's very different than accidentally spending everything that you have.
Yeah.
Whoopsie. You know, that's never fun.
I know. It makes it so, it just provides clarity. Like you said, if you feel like you need further education, when you have kept track of everything, you can just go back and go, oh, I have lots of money left to do that. I've barely spent anything this year. Or, oh, I've spent way too much. I can't afford to do it this year, but it's something that I can work towards for the next year, you know, or, you know, it's something that where you're like, I've got to start saving for that specific thing.
And in fairness, I have to remind us all that no one teaches us this stuff.
No.
No one tells you these things.
Yeah.
Right? Like, no one's like, you know, I would assume at least in photography that it's all about the photos and the art and
revenue. Like, everybody talks about revenue and nobody talks about how much it costs to get there. I hear so often like, ooh, I just had a six-figure month, or take this course and you can learn how to, you can learn how to do 60,000 in a month or whatever it is. Just like me, I did 60,000 in a month. And I'm like, who cares at the end of the day if you did 60,000 in a month?
Yeah. After your expenses and after your taxes, what do you get to keep?
Yeah.
That's what really matters.
Yeah.
And I have a multiple six-figure business. I have for years. But what matters to me is, what do I get to take home?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Out of that business, what do I get to take home for my life, for my family?
Right.
And no one teaches you this stuff. And especially in photography, which is such a seasonal business,
right,
where you have huge surges of revenue and then you have months and months where it's very lean, it really takes a strategy and it takes some systems, and no one teaches us this stuff. So if you're out there right now being like, oh, I'm such a loser, don't beat yourself up. It's okay. No one teaches us this stuff. You can learn it.
Yeah.
This is all the stuff that I put into my course, which I am not plugging, just to be clear, but like, no one teaches. No, really, I'm not. I'm not. We'll do that later.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
But seriously, no one teaches us this stuff. And I went through a phase where I read truly every personal finance book out there because I'm an English lit major and I'm a nerd and I like to read things. It's my favorite. And I read every single one, and 99% of the advice did not apply.
Right.
It just didn't apply to me. Because it's all based on the assumption that you earn a steady, dependable salary, which may go up by tiny percentage marks over the years, but does not fluctuate.
Right.
Well, guess what? That's not my reality. It hasn't been for over a decade.
Yeah.
And so we just kind of have to make this stuff up for ourselves.
Yes. It's so funny because even I just had this discussion with somebody else about photography conferences in general. And what happens is when you're sitting in the audience, so they'll have these like big, huge rock star photographers come out to like talk about their businesses, and 99% of what they do doesn't apply to the vast majority of photographers because they're rock star photographers who are bringing in a revenue of $500,000 or shooting in Italy and then in France and then in Japan. Like they have totally different business models than the vast majority of photographers. And what nobody's talking about is what the regular everyday photographer does and how they make a go. And it's almost become uncool, you know, in a way to be an everyday regular photographer. So what's happening now is everybody's taking the advice of these rock stars and trying to be Instagram famous or trying to run these bigger businesses without really doing the groundwork to get there. You know, it's like this whole weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But there is no advice for people who just want to earn a living for their family.
And I have so much respect for entrepreneurs, for people who just want to have a side hustle or want to have a part-time business or even have a full-time business. Like, there's so much integrity in making something beautiful that serves a need that your clients have and doing that with beauty and integrity. Like, that's a wonderful thing. How is that not as worthy as like going and doing fashion shoots in Tokyo or Italy?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In many ways, I would argue it's way more beautiful and wholesome, puts better things into the world.
Yes.
So I applaud those of us with small businesses. I think that we are rock stars.
Yes. We're the rock stars.
Yes.
Just, you know, like, and because I think this sort of revenue focused marketing that everybody's using to sell their stuff, which is what it really is, has made us revenue focused, thinking that that's the goal. When for me, that's the goal is how much money did I make? Did I get paid? How much money did I get paid? I don't care how much. I mean, I do care how much revenue I bring in because, of course, that's related to how much money I get paid.
But sure, yeah,
it's like
absolutely.
It's a whole big picture.
Yeah, and it's why I love what you do, Dana, and I love that you help people with pricing. That's one of the really like nuts and bolts, you know, really useful things that is so helpful to people, right? And like some of the stuff that we're talking about here is not sexy. Like I'm talking about spreadsheets, right? I have this amazing spreadsheet that changed my life that helped me learn to forecast my, not like fantasy income, but my actual contracted income.
Right.
Literally changed my business, helped me understand why I was always feeling like I was falling short, even though I was making, you know, on paper, great money.
Right.
That's not sexy. No one talks about that. But that is the thing that helped me go from feeling like a struggling entrepreneur to feeling like, oh, I've got this. I've got this. And I know when I can splurge and I know when it's time to tighten the belt. And when you're doing those things mindfully, they both are fine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't mind going lean if I need to.
Right.
If I know that I'm doing it on purpose and I'm just kind of waiting it out for a couple months when something big is going to happen.
Right.
That feels very different than accidentally running out of money and feeling like a loser.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I totally know. Well, okay. So we should probably wrap up. So any final thoughts? Any final things you want to share?
No guilt, no shame. Don't compare yourself to the Insta-famous people, even if you are Insta-famous.
Right.
Because you never know what's going on behind the scenes. Everybody has shit. And this is something I've learned from working with women who are like truly bona fide successful by every metric. It doesn't matter. Everybody has stuff going on behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah.
So be where you are. Give yourself the real tools you need, not the like flashy tools that'll make you feel fancy, but the actual things that are going to help you get to the next step in your business. And give yourself whatever you need in order to make that business go, whether it's hours of dedicated time, it's childcare, it's a weekend alone by yourself, it's a computer that actually runs fast enough to process, right? Like,
yeah.
Give yourself the tools that you actually need.
Right.
And then put in the work, and I can't wait to see what you do with it. It's going to be gorgeous.
Awesome. Declare dominion, people. Right? Mm-hmm. Declare dominion.
And for people who want to know more about the money stuff specifically,
yeah.
I have a free guide that I created. Can awesome. I tell people about it?
Yes, let's tell people about it.
Okay, so it's literally called the 5 things that no one tells you about managing your money as a creative entrepreneur.
Excellent.
Because most of personal finance just doesn't apply to us. And you can find that, my main website is declaredominion.com. But if you go to declaredominion.com/entrepreneurs, you'll find a secret page. And this is just this free guide. You can download it. And in addition to those 5 things, I also talk about the 6 foundational things that I think every business owner needs in order to walk around and hold your head high and feel like you're on top of your game.
Super. I will put a link in the notes of the podcast so that people can get there easy peasy instead of having to spell entrepreneurs.
Perfect.
And I just want to say thank you so much. It's always awesome to talk to you.
You too. This was fun. Thank you.
Yeah.